Hi, everyone. Before we start today's episode, I just wanted to thank you guys so much for listening and for sending so many wonderful DMs and tweets and emails and Facebook messages about how much you're liking the show. It means the world to me on so many levels. And I also just wanted to say that if this podcast is enjoyable to you, please consider taking the time to rate and review it on Apple Podcasts or iTunes or Spotify or wherever you listen. It makes a huge difference in helping us spread the word about this project, a project that I really love. Okay, enough with that and on to the show. I'm Hillary Kerr, and this is Second Life, a podcast spotlighting women who have truly inspiring careers. We're talking about their work journeys, what they've learned from the process of setting aside their doubts or fears, and what happens when they embark on their second life. Today, I am beyond delighted to welcome a true talent and someone who I personally follow very closely because she is endlessly interesting and inspiring, Amber Lewis of Amber Interiors. If you pay attention to the interior design world at all, or have ever saved an image of a room on Instagram, chances are you've probably seen and or saved Amber's work. She is hugely successful and a true powerhouse in the world of interiors, thanks in part to her beloved design blog, full-service high-end residential design firm, two recently opened retail stores, and upcoming book. It's a lot. And even more interestingly, this wasn't the plan at all. Before she started her flourishing career, Amber spent years on the road with her musician husband and planned to be a stay-at-home mom until a bout of postpartum depression ended up kickstarting her career in an unexpected way. She's here to tell us about it, and I am so excited for today's episode of Second Life with Amber Lewis. So, Amber. On this show, we always like to start at the beginning.
Okay.
So let's start at the beginning. What did you study in school, and what did you think you were going to be when you grew up?
Well, if I'm really frank and honest, I was a horrible, horrific student. I was pretty much loser 101. I feel like I just had the ability to kind of skate by. I was able to kind of just do the bare minimum and get away with murder, and it was amazing. So I floated through high school, and then when I graduated from high school, my dad was sort of like, you better do something with your life because you can't just kind of float around. And I kind of backstory, I really liked to work, and I had been working for years. So he said, well, if you graduate and everything's good and – you know, you figure out something to do, as long as you keep a job and as long as you go to some school, I'll continue to, like, help you pay your rent and whatever. So I enrolled actually in FIDM thinking, well, I'm a creative person. I got to get my hands doing something. I don't know what that is. And I figured, well, fashion. I'll just do fashion. I grew up in LA. I figured, like, okay, I'll make a whatever.
Sure.
Who knows? I'll do that. So went. I was there for 8 weeks, and I said, this is not for me, left. And kind of really shortly thereafter ended up getting a job in retail, but it was like this high-end kind of home store. And I really loved it, and it was a lot of like doing almost interior design for these clients that would come in and just want their tables decorated or they'd want their beds made or whatever, and I really got into it. So I thought, well, maybe I'll try interior design. So I looked around and found UCLA Extension and enrolled. And I was able to get in kind of without having the bachelor's or any of the thing which they require now.
No
which was
way.
Amazing. Yeah, it was pretty cool. So I got to take all the classes and do whatever, but
so, I'm
that
sorry,
was short-lived.
Was it like a program around interior design?
Yes, it's the UCLA Extension Interior Design Program.
Amazing.
I know. So anyway, I went to UCLA for a little bit and then dropped out of that too.
Interesting. So what kinds of classes were you taking? Were you like dealing with like CADs? Was it textiles? Was it – I have no idea what the curriculum must be like.
Your first semester is sort of silly. And actually looking back, I wish I had just gone that extra year because I think that would have been the real important things that I needed to know now running a business. But it was color theory and it was sketching. And you learn about floor plans. And I learned a lot about like lighting design and stuff. But it was amazing to immerse myself in that. And it really, I think, if anything, solidified that that was the career that I wanted to have in some capacity. I still was trying to figure it out, but I knew that that was the field that I wanted to be in.
So you dropped out.
Yes.
What made you decide to do that?
So I was working at this store, and it was really great, and I thought it was amazing. I met my husband. Oh, he's my boyfriend at the time, but I met my husband, and I was really young. I mean, I was only 22 years old. And almost immediately after we met, we got engaged. And so I was basically like a child bride. I was married at 25, which, see, I mean, in LA, that is essentially, you might as well be married at 12.
Yeah, that's very
young. It
doesn't
happen. Yeah. So I had kind of gone on this trajectory of just thinking like whatever. And he was a musician. So I wasn't really able to work as much, and I wasn't able to go to school as regularly. I kind of just fell into his schedule more. Mm-hmm. And my life just kind of became about what he was doing and touring and all that crazy stuff. So
wait, did you like go on the road with him?
I did.
What was that like?
It was pretty wild. When I first met him, was a total straight edge who didn't drink, he didn't eat meat, and was like just so boring. And I mean, I loved him for a multitude of things. The party side of it was not that. So it wasn't as wild and cool as you would think it was, but it was amazing. Like, we got to go to cool places. He was headlining these insane festivals in the UK, like Reading and Leeds. And so we would be kind of in an immersed, like this sea of literally 60,000 people. And I would just got to see like this whole other life. And no pun intended, like it was literally a second life. Like it was our old life. And so I thought, you know, I'm just going to be on the road with him. He's so successful. We're just going to kind of live this life. And as much as I like school, I don't think I need it, and I think I can kind of figure it out. And I was young.
I'm sorry, that sounds way sexier than like taking
than
classes.
Color theory, yeah, for sure.
So that is a good way to spend mm-hmm. one's early mm-hmm. 20s. So yeah. Then what happened?
We just kind of did our thing. We traveled. We did the road thing, and that was amazing. And then I got pregnant with Gwyneth, and that was wonderful. And I thought, you know, as all 20, I think it was 27, 28, something like that. And I thought, oh, I'm just going to be a stay-at-home mom. I'm going to have 100 kids, and I'm just going to be home, and this is going to be my life with my, like, rock star husband, and this is so great. And I had Gwynny, and everything changed for me dramatically. I mean, I was now a mom with a husband who was always on the road, so he would go like 6-week stretches and I wouldn't see him, but I couldn't really travel
because the baby was too little.
Yeah. So
you were alone a lot.
I was alone a lot, and I was suffering super bad. I didn't really know it at first, but I just was inundated with postpartum. I had no clue what was going on, but I was just like, the blues were bad, and I just couldn't get out of bed, and I was just sort of miserable. So we had kind of this come to Jesus moment mm-hmm. with my husband and I, where he said, like, do you want me to stop? Do you want me to come home? And I said, no, I don't want that. We just need to figure this out. Like, this is either going to be our life and I'm going to have to figure out how to go with you, or you're not going to be able to do these stretches anymore. I can't do this by myself. And it was kind of like all these things. And what we sort of skipped over was when I got back from getting married and having my honeymoon and doing all that stuff, as I was still working at that store, a old neighbor of mine who's the super successful designer in Malibu had heard that I was sort of in the design world of some type and came to me and said, hey, would you ever want to come work for me just part-time, like creatively doing whatever? And so prior to having Gwynny, I had started working in an interior design firm a little bit, just sort of getting my feet wet and trying to see if that was really for me. And I really loved it. Mm-hmm. I really, really loved it. So cut to after having G, I had sort of stopped working for her. And then for about like 4 or 6 months, my husband and I were just trying to figure it out. And kind of at the same time, his whole music scene kind of started to dissolve anyway. We were buying a house, and I was like, well, I'm going to go back to work to sort of supplement you not being working so much. So I went back to work for my old boss.
Got it. Okay. So now at this point, you're like dealing with your own postpartum depression.
Yep.
You just bought a house.
Yes.
And you are now have given up the dream of being a stay-at-home mom and are now going back to work in part because you need to.
Yes.
To help 100%. The family. So then what happened next?
So I was working for this woman, she's a great mentor of mine. I still love her to this day. Her name's Kirsten. And she kind of knew that I was like juggling a million things. I was juggling being a mom. I was juggling being a wife. I was juggling just buying a house, all these other crazy things. And she sort of said to me, you know, I think you can do this on your own. And I think you should do this on your own.
She pushed you out of the nest that early?
She fired me in a really nice way.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. And she, I mean, she must have seen something that I didn't see in myself. Mm-hmm. Either that or she was just trying to, like, be nice and just be like, you're fired and totally sucks. Just go on your own. But I did. I didn't really go on my own immediately, but I had bought the house and started a blog.
When you started the website, you didn't have clients?
No.
You just – because back in the day, if my memory serves, because I was an early reader, you were – a lot of it was about you had bought this house and you were renovating it and doing a lot of it yourself, right?
DIY. We were DIYing everything.
So that's where the majority of the content was coming
Absolutely.
From.
Absolutely.
Was that helping with the postpartum for you? Was that like having something else to do? Was that something that was important to you?
That was my main focus, and there was no other reason for it. I think – my whole life, I wanted to be quote unquote successful and whatever that was. I was I'm very driven. We were just talking about it. I'm a Virgo. I am like, this is how things need to be. And once I get my mindset on something, I'm not satisfied until I've achieved that goal. Mm-hmm. And I think when I started the blog, it was a creative outlet for me that quickly became an obsession. And I think what became obsession about it is that it was starting to get attention and it was starting to, I was being revalidated as a human being for something other than potentially sucking at being a mom because you're so confused. And then also just like being something other than just Gwynnie's mom and Mike's wife. And
it was your like own identity.
100%.
So did you have like a publishing schedule back in the day?
No.
Did you have like an editorial calendar?
Oh, no.
How did you get people to come to the site? Like what was the whole plan?
I was a perfect storm of luck and talent. I think that and timing, luck, talent, and timing. I kind of was in the right place at the right time. I had started the blog. It was really just at the beginning of 2011, 2010. And I was very like sporadically posting things. Instagram wasn't a thing yet. Mm-mm. Pinterest was just starting to be a thing. One of the bigger bloggers, Joanna Goddard.
Yeah,
Cup of Joe.
Cup of Joe.
I had posted my dining room nook that I did, which like back in the day I had layered a Killam rug, which was I guess like this whole like thing that back then no one was doing.
They
now
weren't.
Everybody does it, and which is awesome. And I did it, and it got picked up by her, and then it got picked up by someone else, and then Glitter Guide. Which back in the day, Glitter Guide had asked me if I could do a home tour, so I did. And then the home tour really they had like a pretty big readership, and that just kind of was. That's what really kind of catapulted the name into a little bit more of like a broader realm of people.
Got it.
So I got really lucky with where things got circulated.
Got it. And then did you have plans where you're like, okay, so like I'm going to be a content creator? Or in the back of your head, were you thinking about this as being a launching pad for an interior design career of your own?
I was winging it. 100%.
I you're like, I had no plan.
I had no plan. And I want to be like this girl that was so,
strategic.
You know, together and strategic. Hell no. I was a shit show just trying to make it work.
Yeah.
And I was on the train of fake it till you make it. I was just like barely keeping it together. Mind you, I have a baby too. Well, she's not a baby at this point. She's like a year. But still, I don't
That's
have
a baby.
Yeah, absolutely. She's still like breastfeeding for crying out loud.
Yeah.
And so life was just very just like day to day, but I was really obsessed with the attention that it was getting, is so like narcissistic. But that is truly I was obsessed with that it was getting recognition.
You're being seen. That feels
absolutely
good.
And for a talent that I was knew that I had, but to be able to get that to other people was really satisfying. It was scratching an itch.
So, as someone who has worked on, you know, I've been an editor my whole career and we have my domain and we started out in the home tour and home decor specifically space, I know that there is a very distinct difference between being able to do like a roundup of amazing chairs and knowing which chair works in which room and what the scale should be. They're very different skill sets. And yet you have both sides of it, which I find wildly amazing and impressive.
Thanks.
But how did you take the blog and translate that into interior clients. So how long was it from the time you started the site until someone came and said, like, hey, would you design my living room?
Yeah. So I started the to get emails, and they were just a lot of, will you come literally paint my house? Like, it was things that people were asking me to do that I would just say yes. And I figured that if I said yes enough, I would figure out the rest of it. I would say the first client came, it was actually someone that my husband knew. She was in, like, the record business. And so she came and she asked me to help plan her wedding, do the flowers for her wedding, and decorate her brand new house with her husband. And I did all three of those things at one time.
What?
And that was just me saying yes to an opportunity. I didn't.
Had you planned a wedding?
No.
Besides yours?
No, absolutely not. I was, like I said, I was just grasping at whatever opportunity came my way. I learned something from doing that. Okay, this is what I'll never do again. This is what I will do again.
And no weddings, yes to homes.
Yeah, I'm not going to paint anybody's bedrooms by myself either.
So with that first project in her home,
yeah.
Did you document that and use all of that as content for the site? And was that then sort of like your calling card, and then people were starting to see that you were taking on clients?
Kind of. It was sort of, like I said, it was just this very random, all of a sudden things just started to happen and emails just started to come through.
So it was just inbound.
Totally. It was just like very randomly, like, oh, can you help me do this? And I would say yes. Oh, can you do two rooms? Yes. Can you do three rooms? And almost immediately, I landed this insane gig. I don't still to this day know how it happened, but we got this really beautiful home with this incredible client, this woman named Jen. And she just let us do her whole bedroom. And I posted about it, and Sunset Magazine took it. So this is 2013. I started my company October of 2013. So it was like almost immediately after I started the company, Sunset reached out and they sent like Lisa Romerine, who's this incredible interiors photographer, this amazing stylist, and they came and shot her bedroom. I had no help really except for one girl who literally had been with me for 5.5 years. And we were just winging it. And that, I think that was really the catalyst to all of it.
Were you making mistakes along the way?
Oh my God, I still make mistakes.
Like what?
Everything. Like it is a interior design is a funny one because you forget that you're basically moving someone into a house, plus you're trying to make it look beautiful and you're trying to keep it at a budget. So it's a trifecta of everything that could go wrong, will go wrong, and you're managing a million other people who are trying to make you look good. Which is really tough. I can't always depend on the carpenter or the cabinet maker or the upholsterer to be on my lead times. And so you're sort of like juggling a million people. You're project managing. You're also trying to make the clients happy. You're also trying to make yourself happy. And you're also trying to show a really beautiful project, you know. So it's crazy.
And then at the same time, you're creating content.
Yes. Over the years, as the business has taken off, the business has become a bigger beast than I really have ever imagined. And I'm so grateful for every opportunity. I'm always convinced that the phone is never going to ring again, but it continues to, and it continues to just grow and grow past anything I ever thought would happen. And so the blog kind of took a back seat. So at the beginning of this year, we decided to do a whole brand new blog. It's coming out in November. It's called All Sorts Of, and it's basically just going to be a lifestyle go-to all things Amber Interiors, but then also we're meeting with, like, makers and meeting other entrepreneurs, and we'll do a little bit of video content, and it's just going to be our little world for everyone to go to. As we've grown, my ability to share is actually being taken away from me a lot more. My clients are a different profile. Sometimes I can't always show everything, so it kind of messes with my content.
Got it. I mean, even though you never say people's names, I love the fact that you give them code names code name hashtags.
You know, there's a very select few that are okay with being on the circus, if you will.
Interesting.
And then there's quite a few that are not.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
More private, for lack of a better word, because it sounds so snobby, but it's like higher profile people that don't necessarily want their shit blasted all over Instagram or me sharing like the white paint color that we use. They're like, no, don't share.
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
So So throughout this process, how have you been accruing knowledge and figuring out resources? Yeah. Was a lot of that coming from working with that first interior designer? Was it just making things happen along the way?
Making things happen along the way and failing and doing things and making mistakes and then never doing them again. I'm so resourceful, mm-hmm. and I've had to basically figure everything out on my own. I mean, even when I was working for the last designer, I was not on the back end. I had no idea how to run a business. I didn't even know how to pay sales tax. Like, all of that stuff was just beyond my above my pay grade, really. And mm-hmm. I had no clue, so I had to just figure it out, which has been, I think, the catalyst for the success. I haven't been able to rely on anybody else. I mean, I have an amazing team that have now propelled us to the level that we're at now. But in the beginning, I mean, it was just solo. I mean, it was me solo.
So speaking of that, I always think it's really interesting to hear how people figure out how to build teams and how to be managers, because just because you're a creative, talented person who's a self-starter and who's resourceful doesn't mean that necessarily you're going to be good at hiring.
Right.
It doesn't mean that you're going to know who to hire, when to hire, how to motivate those people, how to be a good boss. So when did you first start hiring, and like, what were some of the big things that you learned along the way?
My first hire was 2013, almost right when I started the business. I had actually I'd been doing smaller projects prior to, and I was working with this other girl, and it was just, I learned a lot from that relationship. I learned a lot about trust, and I learned a lot about how your vendors perceive you and how people treat you. As I've grown, I've just really kind of honed what I mean to the business. So, like, where do I fill in and where does everyone else fill in? And what does everyone kind of require from me and what do I require from them? And if I'm honest, it's a daily struggle.
My business partner, Catherine, always says, only do what only you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And that and obviously as an entrepreneur, you have to do everything.
Yeah.
But as you continue to scale and grow, it gets to a point where there are going to be some things that you can delegate and there are going to be some things that you can't delegate.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, okay, figuring out what truly is something that you need to touch or okay or ideate or create, if you can figure out that and then not get caught up in all of the stuff that's either A, not your strong suit, or B, something that doesn't really matter, or like C, something that you can trust someone else to hand that off to. But delegating is so hard.
There's this drive in your brain that you think, oh, I've created this. I am the only person who can continue to make this go. And that's not true. And I think letting go is the biggest – is part of success. The more you say you're so busy you can't do this, you're really just not delegating and you're really just not doing your job as a manager or a leader. And this is all becoming really clear as we grow. The more clients I say yes to, which I have no intention of saying no, and that's kind of the problem. I just am like, yeah. I still have that mentality like it's feast or famine.
Yeah.
But I have to just, you know, it's all about building a team and really making sure that I'm managing and doing what I do best, which is editing and making sure that the team feels supported to continue to crank out good stuff.
So one of the things I'm also always interested in is the financial piece of things. Did you know how much to charge in the beginning? Did things work financially the way that you thought that they would?
Yeah.
How did the money work?
So when we first really dove in, it was like at the same time I was starting my business, my husband was stopping the band, and we decided to sell everything. We sold our house, and we essentially just put all of our eggs in this basket.
What?
Uh-huh. We did. And I had only enough money to put a full year of rent to a house, and I had a whole year's salary set aside for someone to help me. And we had just enough to kind of pay for preschool and then get by. And that is essentially, that was it. That was our leap of faith. That's how we started. And when I first started, I was charging enough to pay my help, pay the team.
Yeah.
Pay myself very, very small. and buy products to be able to start my online store.
So the online store was part of the plan from the beginning.
That happened out of a need for people wanting the textiles and the pillows that I was using.
Got it.
So I did, like, designed with it, and then the amount of inquiries and people asking, where did you get that? What is that? How can I get that? That's really how that whole thing started. And I was selling things on Instagram. This is, like, back in the day. I was literally doing, like, flash sales. So dumb. But it was great because it worked.
Because you had extra product?
Yeah.
I was just buying it
and making it. I was having myself and my nanny and a pillow guy make pillows when my kid was asleep. I mean, that is literally what we do. We would stuff them and take photos of them on the concrete, outside in the grass. But people wanted it, and I was selling things, and I was really, really pumped up by this process.
How did you have the idea to start two brick-and-mortar stores in this day and age when everything seems to be going the opposite way?
Yeah.
I think I'm always interested in the handful of you know, sort of digital sales people who then decide to take it to an IRL experience. What prompted that?
I think because the way that we design is such a tactical, you have to be in it to really appreciate it. While photos, of course, do it justice. I mean, Instagram and our portfolio and Pinterest and everything has been really beneficial for us. But to be able to actually walk into a place and see it. When I got my first office, we had a small little showroom at the front. And then I was like running five of us or four of us in the back. And we just thought, okay, well, I'm going to tell everybody that, you know, by appointment only, you can come and I'll display the pillows in the front and I'll have like a little furniture set up and we'll see what happens. And almost every day, the phone would ring and people asked if they could come and shop. And it was a lot of designers.
Oh.
And so it was almost from a need of A, needing more space, B, really wanting to have a retail location. Not really knowing how to do all of that, but I thought it would be a nice way to really have like an enveloping experience when you walked in. So there was this little space kind of down the street from where we lived that I had my eye on for no apparent reason. I just thought it was cute. And I, you know, me and like all my crazy, I got this. I'm going to just start a store. So I literally said, I'm just going to call. And it was occupied by a business for 2 years. And we were in Mammoth and we got home. And I'm like, can we just drive by the store just to see? And literally in the very, very, very corner, there was a for rent sign or for lease. And so I took another huge leap of faith. I said, hey, it worked out for me the first time. Let's try it again. And that was it. And the next thing I know, we are borrowing again from our piggy bank. I mean, I've never borrowed a dime. I've never loaned.
You're completely self-funded.
Completely self-funded. And so we just thought, okay, well, let's just put whatever we have, again, in savings to this business and see what happens. And we opened it up. And that was, it'll be 3 years on my birthday. I opened September 17th. That was the first store, Calabasas. Mm-hmm. And then we just opened our second store in Palisades.
That's insane.
Yeah.
At what point did you start to feel like, okay, maybe we can relax? Okay, this is going in the right direction.
Never.
You still feel that
Absolutely.
Anxiety.
I mean, I think if you lose that anxiety, you lose your strive to do better in business. I mean, I really truly feel like that adrenaline of being able to go and get bigger and bigger and bigger is what makes me tick. I think if I lose that, then I lose all of it. I mean, and that maybe is my Achilles heel. Who knows? Like that may be my demise. But so far, that's just how I've been. I don't really – the more comfortable I get, the more uncomfortable I get.
So have you ever thought about taking outside money, or is it really important to you to stay self-funded?
It's very important to me to stay self-funded. I never say never. I think where we will end up – sort of branching out as if licensing and whether or not I end up putting my name on things that will be a little bit more mass market. But right now, it's all just been from our own pockets. And I like it that way. There's a control that I have. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the minute that I borrow, and this is probably not true, but in my brain, the minute I borrow, the minute I sell. So it's like, to me, I will lose everything that I've built, you know, and my struggle.
Okay.
I like to struggle. There's like a confidence in, there's like a little bit of a, you know, it's like that like misery. Like, I like to know that if I am a little stressed out, then I'll continue to work this hard, which is okay. So psycho. But, you know, let's be real here.
You know what? We all have to find motivation in our own ways.
Yes. Yeah.
On that point, you started doing single rooms and then multiple rooms and then full houses.
Yeah.
But now you've expanded beyond that too, like where you're involved in the design process with the architect, with all of it. Do you like being there from ground up? Like what part of your day-to-day in the interiors world do you like the most?
I would say my favorite part is always going to be the creative. I don't love the construction. The construction is where the most mistakes happen, and not for lack of a talented team or for lack of whatever, but the clients tend to be inherently way 10 times more stressed out because they're shelling out amounts of money that are super uncomfortable for everybody. It doesn't matter how much you have. It's always uncomfortable. When you get over that hill, then you're smooth sailing and it's wonderful. I mean, I like it all, but I prefer to be involved from the get-go, because then you have a lot more control over the end product. I mean, then you have a lot more responsibility for the way that it looks.
Got it.
Yeah.
Wow, that's so crazy.
That's crazy.
Okay, so let's go to some practical stuff. What advice would you give someone, especially for stay-at-home moms or moms who have left the workforce for a little while and are interested in getting back into the work world? What advice would you give someone who is interested and needs a little shakeup?
I mean, I think if you feel really confident about what you would be providing to your space, whatever that is, if it's interior design, if it's a blog, if it's fashion, whatever it is, if you feel convicted that you're having something to give, then go for it. You know, stay-at-home mom or someone who's been doing it for 40 years, I think you can always break off and branch. Be prepared to work really hard. There's no crying in baseball. Remember? There's no crying in baseball. It's the same thing. Like, you can't cry if you really want this, you'll go for it and you won't complain and the hard work will pay off in the end. And you just got to move forward. I don't know. Stopping and analyzing is not, it shouldn't be anybody's strong. I feel like sometimes blind faith is a huge, huge strong suit in people, just knowing that if you are convicted enough, you'll make something happen.
I always think about the fact that when Catherine and I started our company, that at least for me, I knew enough to do it, but not enough to not do it.
Mm-hmm.
There was a level of ignorance about what we were taking on that I think really helped, because if I had fully understood the scope of what we were attempting at that moment in time, I think it would have terrified me.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would have understood my own ability to work or my own capacity to be all in.
Yeah.
And that it was one of those things, by the time I was in the middle of it, I wasn't going to stop. But if I had known ahead of time it was going to look like that, I'm not sure what – I hope I would have taken the plunge, but I don't know that I would have. So
yeah.
I do think there is something where it's like, just if you just try and you just go, sometimes that's really what you need.
I think like a fear-based success is actually really commendable. I think if you can get past the fear and still succeed, and if you can thrive off the fear – and do really well, then, you know, you're good. I think challenge yourself. What's the worst that can happen? Fail? According to who?
That's a good point.
Right?
That's a good point.
It's all like according to who.
You mentioned at one point that you never really mastered CAD.
Yeah.
And which is design software for people who are not necessarily familiar with it. I always think about the fact that it drives me crazy that I never learned how to code.
Mm-hmm.
If you could go back and do it over again, what would you do differently?
I don't know if I would learn CAD now.
Interesting.
I was asked this question by an employee the other day. They're like, well, when are you going to start taking those, you know, classes to learn? And I said, but then I won't be able to focus on the things that I'm good at.
Yeah.
If I sat there and worked on CAD all day long, it would be a whole new experience for me. And yeah, I could probably master the basics of it, but I'm never going to be able to do the 4 years that you took in class or, you know, your degree. So why would I do that right now when I'm really, really good at running the business and layer. I mean, well, kind of. But I'm really, really good at like making something look a certain way. That's that's my strength. And I've just really kind of decided to stay in the lane of being good at what I know. I think if I could go back, actually, to answer your question, what I would do different, I think I would probably have just absorbed a little bit more, or tried to absorb a little bit more from when I did interior design prior, to really, really ask the right questions and find out a little bit more about the back end, because I've spent years trying to figure out how to run this business successfully, and the taxes and the other stuff that kill you. I mean, that's a whole other world. I actually would have gone back and learned like how to run a business. That was a big lesson.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what are you working on now? You've got the book coming
up.
Yes. Tell us about the book.
The book. Well, it's titleless right now.
TBD.
It's TBD. But I'm working with Clarkson Potter.
Cool.
I know. I'm really excited about it. It will be out probably spring 2020, which seems like an eternity.
But that's how the way books work. So is it about interiors?
Is
it about design? Is it practical? Is it inspirational?
It's inspirational with a couple of tidbits, little quick tips on how to sort of achieve the style that I've become known for. But it's really just a lot of just work and things that we've done, unseen photos and the ins and outs of our process, the design process, the pretty stuff. No business, no nothing like that, just the pretty stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you've got the book that's in the works. You have the blog relaunching.
Yes. Allsortsof.com.
Coming.
It's coming November.
You have all of your clients.
Yes.
You have two stores,
yes,
one in Calabasas, one in Pacific Palisades.
That's right.
Anything else that we should know about?
So we are probably going to open up another location.
What?
I know. In this day and age,
Can you do one closer to me? Because I remember when the Calabasas one opened, I was looking for rugs, and you guys were so nice. Like, your assistant was like sending me photos of things because she said straight up, she's like, you don't want to drive this far. It's very far.
But
in all honesty, where do you think the next location will be?
We're looking at two potentially to open. So I think we're going to go up north, and I think we're going to go down south. So
interesting.
So we're going to stay in California,
but not heading to Silver Lake yet.
Not yet. We have a carved out little niche. I think we would do really well in this area, but I also feel like, you know, you get too close to yourself, you become your own competition.
Yeah.
So it's just making sure that you're spread enough.
I get it.
Out so that you're not taking away from one store to feed the other.
Okay, last question,
yes,
which is always my favorite question, which is, if you, Amber, could go back in time and talk to your younger self, what advice would you give her?
Chill the fuck out. That's what I would tell her. I was in some huge rush. And now looking back, I mean, I'm going to be 37 next month. And I started down like the path that I'm now on with my husband at 22 years old.
You were a baby.
As a baby. And I think now looking back, everything has happened for a reason.
Yeah.
But there was so much pressure from me to hurry up. And I can't change anything because it is what it is. But I think just anybody who's now potentially looking back and being hard on themselves or going through it currently, it's like, just slow down and take it all in, because it's still going to be there. You're not going to change. Trajectory is going to be what it's going to be. If you continue to hustle, whether or not you do it faster than someone else or at your own pace, you'll succeed, because what is success? Like, it's you achieving a goal. So I think looking back, I would just say, slow down and enjoy it a little bit.
All right.
Chill out a little.
Well, thank you. That was Amber Lewis of Amber Interiors. For more inspiring interviews like Amber's, head on over to mydomain.com. If you like today's show, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to rate us and review us and hopefully say nice things. We love seeing you spread the word on social, and now you can tag us. We are at Second Life Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Content is coming. As always, we want to know who you'd like to hear from on this show, so email us your request to secondlife@mydomain.com, or you can just DM me on Instagram, I'm at Hillary Kerr, or you can hit us up at Second Life Pod, because that's a thing now. I'm Hillary Kerr, and you've been listening to Second Life.